is episode 334 of Aloha Mora for November 6th, 2021. Welcome to another episode of Aloha Mora, MuggleNet.com's in-depth exploration of the Harry Potter series. I'm Sam Williams.
And I am Aurelia Lieb. And it is my great honor to introduce a returning guest, Aaron Hancock. Hi, Aaron.
Welcome.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
I know you've been on the show before, but as we just discussed, it was a while ago. So yes. Why don't you remind everyone about your Hogwarts house, your wand, your Patronus, anything of what gotcha. You know and what you want to share?
Yeah. I am a Ravenclaw, proud Ravenclaw. My wand is birchwood with a unicorn core, and it's 10¾ inches and brittle. I'm not sure about the brittle, but yeah.
I'm not even sure about the length, that says to me. But
no, and then my Patronus is a dragonfly, so that's interesting.
Ooh.
So thank you.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, I was on episode, I did Goblet of Fire, the first task, a while back.
The first task. Mm-hmm. That is an interesting one. Lots of dragons.
Yes.
Dragon for the dragonfly, man.
Yes.
Right. It is very nice to have you on. And I think, Sam, do you want to tell everyone what we're doing today?
We will be doing another chapter revisit. This will be Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 9, Grim Defeat. We recommend that you stop right now listening to this podcast. Pause it. Go crack open your book or open your ebook. Go to Chapter 9, reread it before continuing along with us. Also, if you want to hear previous episodes, you can go all the way back to episode 24. Episode 24, that's some 300-odd episodes in the past, with hosts Caleb, Kat, and Laura, with guest host Allie Wood, who we now know as Allison, current team member.
Yay! Honestly, it's mind-blowing that it is episode 24 and they were already covering Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's great.
This podcast is old.
Yes, it is. But thanks to our sponsors, this episode, in fact, being sponsored by Brian Stischer on Patreon. Thank you, Brian. Woo. Woo-hoo. Yay. Thank you.
And also the second time already, Brian.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it. If you would like an ad-free version, which amazing, right? Like ad-free, no ads, no advertisements, no commercials. If you want that, it's on our Patreon. So if you want an ad-free version of Aloha Mora, you can go over to Patreon and become a sponsor for as little as 200 pennies a month. Thought you were going to say dollars, weren't you? No. 200 pennies, or aka $2 a month. That is the exclusive place to get, you know, our bonus audio, our behind-the-scenes glimpses, some extra episodes. Allison and I, speaking of Allison, just recorded a ranking of Harry's Halloweens, which is funny because we're going to be talking about one of them today, kind of. It's great. You know, go to Aloha Mora Patreon. You can find the ad-free versions. You can get the bonus audio, all of that jazz, if you visit patreon.com/AlohaMora. Patreon.com/AlohaMora to find out more.
Right, and now we're looking back to episode 332, which was a chapter revisit for Order of the Phoenix, chapter 18, Dumbledore's Army. And the episode title was Honing in on the Voldy Mind. If you haven't listened to that yet, go check it out. It was very funny. And we've had some really amazing comments, so I'm going to give out a shout-out, Maxima, to, I think, a new commenter. At least the name was new to me. So Mayor of Mold on the Wold is our shout-out, Maxima, comment today. And Dave said, I've had a theory about the Room of Requirement for a long time, and this seems a good episode to share this on. We all know Hogwarts is living and breathing and interconnected. We also know that the Room of Requirement does not appear on the Marauder's map, that it does not follow the usual laws of magical physics or however you want to call it. Sometimes it is there, sometimes it is not, as Dobby says. It also usually becomes what the seeker needs, with one exception. Multiple times, and for many different people, it turns into the room of hidden things. Here's my theory. When the Ravenclaw Common Room asks Professor McGonagall, where do vanished objects go? She answers, into non-being, which is to say, into everything. I believe that the Room of Requirement is this liminal space of non-being, and the Room of Hidden Things is the manifestation of McGonagall's answer. It is literally where vanished objects go. I don't think, as Harry assumes, that thousands of students over the course of centuries have found the room and used it as storage space. That would make it much too common knowledge. Instead, it is where vanished objects go, accidentally vanished or purposefully so. This also ties in with McGonagall's second part of the answer, everything. The Room of Requirement is everything. It can become everything and anything. And to accomplish that, it draws from the vast amount of vanished things inside it. So when the Ravenclaw Common Room poses this riddle, it is fully aware that the room exists. If McGonagall had to have knowledge of the Room of Requirement and had set that as an answer, she would have been let in. That was such a mind-blowing comment. Mm. I just had to pick it because I think we need to talk about it.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Actually, it kind of ties into the episode, so I was going to hold it off until then.
Oh, please, go for it.
About Dumbledore conjuring the sleeping bags for everyone. I'm wondering if that's where the hundreds of squashy sleeping bags come from.
Ooh.
Is this like where teachers supply certain objects and different things for classes?
Oh man, what would I give to have a Room of Requirement where I could just go get teacher supplies without spending galleons? I'm a teacher, Aaron, if that has not been made apparent. So I think the two biggest things that I qualms that I have with this are, if the Room of Requirement is just the place that vanished objects go, and so it can form and move itself around based off of all the objects it's ever had. There's still a lot to be explained as far as why the room obeys commands, where that magic comes from. And also, if that room just is where all vanished objects go, so not like there's nothing about the author here talking about, oh, it's just limited to Britain because like you can't do magic over water or whatever. So it's every single vanished object is going to this room. It should be like,
massive.
Either there's, it's gotta be massive to the point where it is way larger than Hogwarts could ever be. And so to feel like it's contained in that sense, all that magic is contained in that one area. It seems to really put some pressures on a lot of the questions about magical systems that a lot of Potter fans have, which is like, does it take energy? Does this leave a mark anywhere, et cetera, et cetera? But I think the main thing is we see here, right, that you can vanish, you can conjure all of these things. And I think the answer is pretty clear that it's into non-being, therefore everything, which is not like it goes to a physical place. It literally is just magic within the air that they have access to and then can manipulate. That magic is manipulatable.
Pull from that.
Exactly. You can pull from it rather than like all the stuff is here. Because then wizard kind would have had to rely on everybody else to make stuff first and then vanish it before they could even start conjuring stuff. And that seems like a weird way to build a magical system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think sort of regarding the size, I could see that because Hogwarts has, you know, like boundaries and charms and stuff in place to safeguard it, that would be why only stuff that you would vanish within Hogwarts would go into the Room of Hidden Things.
Like a storage system?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it would probably not pull anything from outside because it just couldn't. However, I do see the point about conjuring, and I think one of the many reasons we never really learn how conjuring works, because the only people that we see do it, I think, is McGonagall and Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
And they often do chairs. There's chairs missing. So we never really learn how that even works and how difficult it is. But it's sort of interesting that the two people we see doing it are the
stronger people.
Transfiguration teachers.
Current and former Transfiguration teachers. Yeah, exactly. But I do kind of like the theory that it's just sort of conjuring atoms to go into the right sort of shape.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going very sort of muggle science.
Yeah, I agree.
Same.
But also, like, if it was just like, oh, the stuff that's in the room of requirement is what you can pull from. That's the only system. Like, why were there hundreds of squashy purple sleeping bags?
Yeah.
Like, that are all the same and that have no damage done to them.
Or if you conjure birds, are they coming from the room of requirements?
Right. And, like, yeah, Harry would have walked in on, like, thousands of skeletons of people and animals and all sorts of stuff. Like, it is interesting. Yeah. Now, the vanishing cabinet, right, is actually more of a transportation cabinet where it instantly teleports you between the two locations.
Yeah.
So when Montague gets forced into the broken cabinet, he's not actually being vanished. He's more like being banished to a different location. Or transported instantly, which could lend credence, right? If we're calling that vanishing, could lend credence to this idea of, like, you have to send it to some place. But, like, Montague didn't get stuck in the room of requirement, though. He went to a different place.
Was he in non-being?
He was apparently in non-being, where he's right in everything and could hear both sides, right? He could hear
right.
Flourishing Blots, not Flourishing Blots, but what's the shop?
Bogan and Burks.
Thank you. Bergen and Burks, and could hear what was going on at Hogwarts.
I also think, you know, the few objects that we see both in and outside the room of requirement are all those dark sensor detectors mm-hmm. that fake Moody has, and then they pop up again in Dumbledore's Army's version of the room of requirement. So I don't think anyone vanished those. Probably some sort of house elves had the task of clear out that room and
tucking them away.
Yeah.
Well, Dobby says that. Dobby says he's like, that's where house elves like stuff things away that they aren't too proud of.
Yeah. I guess it's possible that if this is the way the magical system works, that everybody knows that you need to create objects in order to start vanishing and summoning and conjuring them. I think it's possible that you might get some legislation that would pay a department, like maybe the Department of Mysteries, to then start creating all these objects that they would just vanish so that people could have instant conjuring of different things.
So your job is just to be a vanisher?
Yeah, exactly. I could totally see Dumbledore, like, woodworking is his, like, side hobby, and so that's why all of his chairs are glorious when he conjures them.
And McGonagall doesn't, so hers are very stiff and very simple.
Right, so she's just slapping wood together real quick yep. so that she can conjure later.
Maybe it also has to do with personality.
I mean, yes, I do agree with that. I'm just now envisioning the person that works in the Department of Mysteries, and they're like, so what's on my list of stuff to do today? 300 sleeping bags. All right.
Dumbledore. Like,
I can do that.
This needs to be a new chapter in Irvin's The Life and Lies of Dumbledore, is all of the time that Dumbledore spends just as a maker.
Ooh, I like that. I'm here for that headcanon.
Just to create all the stuff that he can conjure to show off in front of people.
Thank you so much, Mayor of Mold on the Wold, for that excellent comment. And I wanted to shout out a discussion that Dream Quaffle kicked off about Hermione specifically. And he said, which do people think is worse, putting the jinx on a piece of parchment for Dumbledore's army or leaving clothes out for the house elves to find? Which started a very long discussion with multiple people involved. So go check out that discussion because it was very excellent.
Also, there's one clear answer.
Do you want to answer?
Yes, for one second.
Okay.
It's obviously putting the jinx a piece of parchment on Dumbledore's army. Any side of slave labor, even if the individual who's been born into the system and can't think outside of the system of slavery, should be set free against their will or not. No, slave labor is not a cool thing. Shouldn't be used. Dobby's right to get paid. Dumbledore's great for paying him. Everybody else should get free. Otherwise, the jinx piece of parchment without telling anybody is unethical, and Hermione should have been reprimanded for that. That's my short answer. Leave your comments on the episode if you disagree.
All right. And also, if you love Alohomora and you want to help us out, please leave us a 5-star review on really any platform that you listen on. If you're on Apple, then I'm assuming that would be Apple Podcasts. But if you're elsewhere, please also just leave us a 5-star review. We will pick our favorites and read them out on upcoming episodes. So if you want your review to be read, please go and leave a review now. And thank you so much for your support.
3 turns should do it.
Chapter Revisit. Prisoner of Azkaban. Chapter 9. Grim Defeat.
Chapter Summary. Harry and Hogwarts spend a night in sleeping bags in the Great Hall, leaving Sirius Black unlimited access to kill students should he just run into the Great Hall and start shooting off Avada Kedavras. McGonagall tries to tell Harry information he already knows, thanks Arthur, and Wood gets all hot and bothered about Hufflepuff's human hunk, Mr. Cedric Diggory. Snape pulls a whole "tell me you're a werewolf without telling me you're a werewolf," and Harry loses a Quidditch match because Dumbledore doesn't do his due diligence with the Dementors. And RIP Nimbus 2000.
What a chapter.
Yeah. What a chapter.
Such a good chapter.
Yeah, and there's so many hints in that chapter is like filled with hints for like the plot of this book.
Mm-hmm.
They're like everywhere.
Yeah.
I just wanted to like note at the beginning that I thought it was very clever that Sirius Black in this chapter is either referred to with like full name, but mostly just as Black, because we still believe that he's evil at this point.
Yeah.
And then obviously later he'll turn into Sirius or Snuffles.
Yeah. So. Just like his name.
I think what's really interesting about this chapter is it's very classic rolling of her to like have a chapter that goes through multiple different scenes, all sort of interconnected, like they're playing on top of each other in sort of close chronological order.
Yeah.
But there's tons of information packed into it. Like it's very popular in young adult literature right now. You do a scene in a place and then that's where the chapter ends and you move on to the next scene. And then that's where the chapter ends. This is sort of a lost art of sort of rolling us through. Sorry, there's no pun there.
Several.
sort of rolling us through all of these events that are connected in a short amount, making it sort of more of a thematic grouping for the chapter rather than a scene grouping for the chapter.
Yeah, rereading this one, I totally thought the same thing, and I didn't realize everything that went on in this one chapter when you guys assigned this one, and I was like, oh, this happens in this chapter? Okay, cool. I thought it was just the Quidditch match. I don't know why.
No, I mean, you hear Grim Defeat, and you're like, oh, yeah. Cedric, Whomping Willow, Harry faints,
mm-hmm.
Arresto Momentum, Michael Gambon's big old voice.
Yes.
But yeah, that's what you think of. And instead it's like aftermath of Sirius chopping up the fat lady and McGonagall trying to be like, hey, Sirius is trying to kill you. And Harry being like, I know, thanks. And McGonagall's like,
old news.
Cool, well, I'm going to take you off the team. And we get like that whole conversation before we even get to one of the most famous movie scenes ever, which is 394. And then we get to the match.
Yes.
But Aurelia, you have a comment here about the slumber party.
Yes. So we this chapter kicks off with that slumber party, with mm-hmm. everyone being in the school. And I mean, we always talk about safety protocols in Hogwarts, but is this the right thing to do?
Well, first of all, why wasn't this the protocol to keep the kids in one place during Trolling the Dungeon? I just don't understand why you wouldn't have all of them together instead of being like, hey, teenagers, take the small kids and go back to their dormitories, but don't look for the troll.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think the real question is like, because I don't mind them being sent away. It seems like dormitories are a safer bet than for a troll, because the troll can't really access all the different, like, doesn't know Ravenclaw's passwords or doesn't know where the fat lady leads to or any of that stuff. But I think the real issue for me on that one is like, okay, the teachers know that the troll's in the dungeon. That's what Quirrell tells them.
Right.
And so they all go to head off that way. But like, why not leave the heads of houses to protect the students as they go off?
Oh, the prefects got it. They're 15.
No, they're 15. Percy Weasley would be stomped and squashed to death.
Yes.
And also, they do this now again. They're like, mm-hmm. all the teachers are going to go out and look for Black. But then also, the only teachers that we hear about and what they're doing, it's not all the teachers. Hogwarts has more than the main teachers that we know of.
Right.
They're like, you could have at least kept like Professor Vector or someone.
Someone.
With the students.
Hi, the dueling master, Wise and Flitwick.
Trelawney?
Just standing there. No, let Trelawney go. Flitwick should be on guard, ready to fight.
Yeah, I mean,
Trelawney would just be like, everyone's gonna die.
Love that. No, I think that this is ridiculously stupid protocol. Everyone should have just been sent home.
Come on, they don't send them home for any other reason. Even once the kids started getting petrified, until like the first one dies, we'll just hold them in house.
Ministry officials should have been brought in to protect the students. Like the fact that they left the head boy and girl in charge in the Great Hall. Now I choose to believe that there are teachers just outside the doors watching them.
Yes.
And like I think the movie made a great decision by having Dumbledore and Snape just in the Great Hall.
Roaming back and forth.
Yeah. Not looking at all. But, oh man, it is real stupid because if Sirius was trying to kill everybody, he could have just gone into the Great Hall and started shooting off killing curses at will.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Percy is head boy, so yes, he is probably, what, 17? He's still just 17. Like, him and whoever the head girl is, I don't think they ever mentioned who it is.
Also, he's Percy. He's single-handedly responsible for Fred's death.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that got dark. I mean, it is sort of baffling because, you know, Wizarding Society believes Black killed 12 people with, like, one flick of his wand, and we're like... Yeah, but he's not going to get past two of our head boys and girls. I mean,
right?
They're not.
We've
muggles.
Educated them.
Yeah, exactly.
And all in one centralized location.
Yeah, and sort of going off from there, Hermione then goes and says, "The one night we weren't in the tower, that which is, you know, a clue that makes sense later mm-hmm. once we know Pettigrew is who Sirius is after." But then also, Ron sort of, I think, I'm not sure if Ron takes Sirius seriously. So see, now I'm doing it. because he's like, maybe he didn't like...
he doesn't know the day.
Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know, man. I think you're underestimating him.
Do we know at this point where Pettigrew is? Is Pettigrew in the dining hall with them? Or is he in the dormitory?
He's in the dormitory. We know that because in the next chapter, Harry catches Crookshanks trying to go eat Pettigrew. Mm-hmm.
It's in this chapter.
Yeah. It's in this chapter. I just didn't know during Halloween, during the feast, if he had, you know, sometimes Ron just has Scabbers with him. So I didn't know where he was in this moment.
I think it's because Scabbers is doing so poorly that he
just left up in the dorm room.
To believe, that he's basically not going anywhere, doing anything.
Makes sense.
Boy.
I just like Hermione's thing where she says the one night we weren't in the tower. Like, do they really believe he would have just waltzed into the tower and just killed however many Gryffindors are in there just to get to Harry?
Yeah, I think they do. I honestly think they believe that.
I think that they think that this is a mad, crazy man who will go to any lengths to achieve his Dark Lord's objective.
Yeah, he's not in his right mind.
I would totally believe that Bellatrix would go in there and do that.
Yeah. Which 1,000%. Then begs the questions, why are not all the students really terrified that the headmaster decided to leave them in charge of the head boy and head girl? And that would be it.
I imagine that there were many letters written to Dumbledore after this by parents saying... If this ever happens again, I'm withdrawing my students and I'm sending them to pig farts.
I feel like he gets them every year and they just become like, you know, a little kindling for the fire.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Come on. Each year the kids are in danger and you're like, it's fine. You'll be back next year.
No one's died yet.
Yeah.
Except for Moaning Myrtle. It's fine.
And then year four.
We're not in year four yet. Yeah. So.
It is. There's a great fan fiction out there, and there are many. But there one where right at the end of Chamber of Secrets, Harry's like, "There was a basilisk down there," and Dumbledore's like, all right, stop there, Harry. I have to contact the Ministry." And the Ministry comes and does a full sweep, like make sure the basilisk is actually dead, like destroys the Chamber of Secrets so it can never be used again, all of this stuff, which all makes a lot of sense. And I feel like there's got to be a scene out there somewhere of this where it's like Sirius Black is in the building, lockdown, totally stop everything. Ministry members are everywhere. Kids are definitely protected. Like,
that's when you let the Dementors loose and you shut down the Great Hall with Patronuses.
Boom. Can you imagine? No.
No, you keep the Patronuses, like, prowling around.
Yeah, you could do that, like, how Umbridge does it with in Deathly Hallows, with her cat just sitting on her shoulders, keeping all the Dementors at bay.
Exactly, and then you just let them loose into the castle, find them, end of book.
Do we think portraits have soul? Like, is Sir Cadogan going to get kissed?
Oh.
No, I think the soul departs once you're dying. No, I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, because they're just the painting. They're magically painted, so... Does magic have a soul?
Good question.
Because it all goes back to Deathly Hallows, and if that was all in Harry's head or he really met Dumbledore, but assuming that would be his soul part and Dumbledore would move on and his portrait is still working, so.
Yeah,
good points. Sure. Good points. Boy, that would suck, huh? All wizards and wizards that made a portrait are now stuck in perpetuity.
Stuck in their soul.
In their portrait.
Yeah, I'm not sure which is worse, ghost or portrait.
Oh, ghosts,
if
for sure.
If that were the case.
Definitely ghosts, yeah.
You leave an imprint is the word that Nearly Headless Nick says. So you still move on, you can just leave an imprint behind.
And I honestly, if I was stuck as a painting, I mean, Violet and the Fat Lady, they seem to know how to party, so I'm down.
Yeah, totally. Versus ghosts, you're just floating around being like, I don't know anything, life has gone beyond me.
I can't eat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder how painted fruit tastes. Name of the episode. but their protection's not great, huh?
No.
But, I mean, Hermione points out the castle is protected by more than walls, so is there some form of protection?
Which, why is it all... I understand why it's Hermione, like, from the author's side of it and why we get it from her, but... It seems like only Hermione ever knows this stuff. Like, none of the older kids bring this up. No one knows about apparition. Nothing like that.
Yeah. I also struggle with this because I'm like, I'm at least a part of you can't apparate inside of Hogwarts. I think the older kids should know because their parents probably can apparate and know.
Yeah.
They know they don't just apparate into the living room. They have to apparate outside of the house.
This tracks for me. Students, parents sometimes don't pay attention or know about any of the safety features or any of the rules or any of that stuff. So the fact that like everyone's sort of like, oh my gosh, and no one's like, actually you can't do that, actually you can't do that, actually you can't do that, tracks. It's like it would be a handful of students that would know. I'm sure like a lot of the upperclassmen aren't having those discussions because they don't need to, because everybody knows.
True.
We can't operate because we all have our license, or most of us have our license. So, like, nobody has to have that conversation. And also, Ron and Harry are just incredibly thick-headed about this, especially Ron.
Yeah.
Ron just apparently cannot remember that there's no apparition.
And he's the one that comes from the magical family.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Which is why Hermione knows, right? Like, if you were... Yeah. Dropped in the middle of a new culture, you do everything you could to look everything up. If you were born into it, you don't.
Right.
Unless you're Harry, then you don't do that.
And maybe it's like kind of like in the sixth year where the Great Hall, like they lifted the spell so you could apparate within the hall. Maybe like the family knows like, hey, you can only apparate into the living room. You can only apparate. So you can't apparate into mom and dad's bedroom or, you know, grandma's study.
The apparition.
Maybe it's like that.
The apparition teacher is hurriedly walking around all the places that he's put little exceptions in, being like, crap, crap, crap.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we do only really hear their classmates talk about it. So I guess we only hear the younger students' perspective.
Yeah.
And then something that stood out to me this time reading is we hear when Snape reports to Dumbledore that he says Filch searched the dungeons like on his own. Was like, why? Like, the guy can't protect himself?
Why Filch in the first place? That is just the question. Why Filch?
He's useless in this situation no matter what. Like, he can't guard the students and he can't search for Black on his own.
No, go sit in your office and we'll call you when it's over. I'm sorry. You can't do anything to help. Like, get a broom and just wait it out.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, because we have way more than eight teachers, and we have eight floors, right? There's seven floors in Hogwarts. And why is Filch searching the basement, this huge basement dungeon place, all by himself? Like, Snape's the one who teaches down there. Why isn't Snape down there?
Well, is it different? Isn't it different? The basement and the dungeon are two. Like, the basement's where the Hufflepuffs are, and then the dungeon is where the Slytherins are. Oh, I always thought the basement was like,
like the first floor
ground. Yeah. And then you go
I guess we don't know how many subfloors there are, and Hogwarts is always changing. So, still, though, it seems ludicrous to have Filch search all of the dungeons just by himself.
He can't do anything. What if he found Black? How would you have known that Filch found Black until you found his body?
Mrs. Norris. This is my headcanon that Dumbledore is trying to have Filch killed so he can finally hire a janitor that can clean with magic. This is Dumbledore's for the greater good coming in here. Like, for the cleanliness of the school, please, for the love of God, Sirius, kill Filch.
No. He's like, Sirius, you had one job.
One job.
I always think Filch is like, maybe he, because he's not a wizard, they couldn't, maybe he did something illegal and they couldn't put him in Azkaban for it. And so they were like, you know what, go clean the school. Just go to Hogwarts and clean the school.
I actually think it's Dumbledore trying to be diverse in his hiring and like hire squibs and half giants. And like, everybody's welcome to work at Hogwarts. And it's like cool to give.
You just can't teach.
Yeah. It's cool to give Filch. Filch could have done Muggle studies if he had been there. Like, Erebus Fig could have been Muggle studies. But yeah, I think if I'm like not joking around, I think that's Dumbledore's purpose is to like, hey, like everybody has an opportunity to be here, which is really cool. No. It just sucks because there's such a big castle.
Yeah, especially with little powerful kids, like you can't do much against them.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do when Fred and George make a swamp in the middle of the floor?
Like, you grab the broom and you start pushing.
I was wondering why do we think Sirius attacked the portrait? Was it just frustrated? Did he think it would actually accomplish something?
Well, that one always strikes me because he was a Gryffindor. He knows, or unless it changed in between his time and Harry's, like, he should know where the fat lady is. He should know a password is required. I think it had to be out of frustration or annoyance with the fat lady for not just letting him in.
I mean, have we met other Blacks? Like, their tempers.
Oh, yes.
Are not very nice. But in all honesty, I think, like, Sirius has been in Azkaban for 12 years. And I think, like, to be so close to finding Pettigrew and to just be stopped by a portrait of a fat lady who won't open, it's got to be just awful feeling. Like, he is a little bit crazy because he's been on the run now for months and was in a prison that unjustly for a long time, and now he just wants to be, he wants to commit the crime he was put in jail for,
right?
And that's, I feel like, it tracks with his desperation.
Yes. Also, maybe, like, you know how certain spells can be broken by damaging the object, a la Horcrux. Mm-hmm. Like, you can break a Horcrux and then the magic within it is done. Maybe he thinks the same thing with the portrait. Maybe if he kills off or breaks the portrait, it'll break the magic.
Yeah.
And he can get in.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, because it seems like he had half a plan. He was like, oh, everyone's going to be in a great hall. I can just waltz in, go up to the seventh floor, go up to the Gryffindor common room. But then he didn't have a plan to continue from there.
Which is why he then gets a list of passwords.
Yeah.
Yes. Crookshanks for the win.
And Sir Cadogan is just like, he had all the passwords, so I let him in.
That's not sus at all.
Because what a safety.
Right. Also, if you can teach the doors to shut when he comes, why can't you teach the portraits not to open for this one person?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
What a fool.
Security in Hogwarts, they just don't work together. we have multiple hints now throughout the whole conversation to happen. So Snape and Dumbledore talking, and Snape says, it seems almost impossible that Black could have entered the school without inside help.
Yeah.
Snape obviously thinks Lupin is the inside help, which at this point we don't know that Lupin and Sirius were friends and that Snape hates both of them.
Yeah.
But also, Sirius is correct.
Sirius
did have inside help.
Not in this case, though, right? He just comes in on with his own Animagus, with the secret passages that he knows so well, and then gets to the door. Right. It's only after this that Crookshanks helps him.
Yeah, but it's helped by proxy at the moment. Like, he had this knowledge before, years before. So right. Technically, Lupin did help. It just,
well, when he made the Marauders map and they did all the exploration together. Yeah, true. And then and then Lupin not saying anything is also helping.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. That, definitely. So, yeah. I just like how Snape very subtly is like, yeah, the inside help. Do you remember we talked about this? And Dumbledore's just like, yeah, nope. Go away.
Yes, I know. Calm down. Right. And who else could he be talking about this year except Lupin? Like,
yeah. I mean, they even talk about it later in this chapter where Harry says that Snape has never hated the previous DADA teachers as much as he hates Lupin.
Yeah.
Old school grudges.
Yeah. And then, like, the next day, I think it's in Herbology, one of the students says, black could turn into a flowering shrub.
Great foreshadowing.
Which
Hannah Abbott, and I love it.
And, I mean, she's not completely incorrect.
No.
He can change his form after all.
Right. It's the brilliance of the writing of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's great foreshadowing. It is also interesting because as the author puts, when you were transfigured into like a ferret, right? When Malfoy is transfigured into the ferret, he has the mind of a ferret. But if you're an Animagus, right, that the big difference there is that you keep your human mind and your human sensibilities and everything. So what happens if you turn yourself into a flowering shrub? Like, are you able to, like, are there witches and wizards out there who just have died?
Are stuck?
They disguise themselves and can't turn themselves back?
Oh, I'm sure there's a whole ward in St. Mungo just for that.
Like,
alone.
I was just like, why do you think a flowering shrub is the one thing he would use?
Because like, they were probably working on it. Shrub? They were working on them in class and she like looked at it and was like, this.
Yeah, I wonder how many random plants there are around the school that just get sent to the hospital wing for Madame Pomfrey to undo.
Make sure this isn't a student, please.
Yeah, I'm sure Fred and George are just, you know, going around planting bonsai trees here and there. Madame Pomfrey keeps getting really frustrated because some of them are students, and after like 60 hours working on one, she's like, I think this is just a tree.
It's just a tree. Or it's just sitting. They just sit them in like a student's seat and the kid's out for the day and like McGonagall's trying. And
please.
Done. And the tree is just saying, I am Groot.
Yeah.
I am Groot. Just and that is how Groot was born.
We've got our MCU crossover. Excellent.
Yeah.
Done.
And also our MCU mentioned, which we need to have. I always like that in the one thing that we know about McGonagall at this point is she loves Quidditch. She was the one that was like, yes, we'll bend the rules and let the first year play and I'll buy him his room. That's totally something I'll do. But like showing how like grave this situation is being by her being the one of being like, maybe you shouldn't play because, you know, it's dangerous. It's just really well done because, you know, that's really how you as a reader is like, oh,
it's serious.
This is really serious.
Right. Here we go. Yeah. I think it's amazing that I'm going to borrow a nickname from Binge Mode Harry Potter, that Megalion, whose sole interest is watching and betting on and, you know, cheating as much for the Gryffindor Quidditch team, is like concerned enough about Harry when Sirius is out. But then in book 5, when she knows Voldemort is back, she's like, let him play.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't play him much in book 5.
Right.
Yeah, after the first one.
But then in book 6, too, he plays 2 games before he gets, you know, sectioned.
And there's no one watching him then.
Yeah, like Voldemort, the actual dude who could figure out a way to just fly into the stadium, pluck Harry off of a broom, and throw him into the North Sea. Like, that actually happens, and she does nothing those 2 years, but, you know, oops, Sirius Black, maybe you shouldn't play.
I guess the difference is Sirius made it inside the castle, And Voldemort at this point has not yet, so I'm assuming she just believes and trusts Dumbledore's safety features that he added to the school.
Because they've had many admin meetings about it since then, and she knows that the safety security is better.
Yeah, but I mean, the real danger clearly is that no one ever thought about putting any charms in place for students falling off of brooms in a game played on brooms with cannonballs designed to unseat people from brooms.
Giant nets, done, yes. Well, like, no, you also have the flying balls that it's their job to knock you off the broom.
Right, yeah.
I was like, so no safety for that? No, we don't need that.
Or permission slips. Hi, if I need one to go into a village, why don't I need one to play Quidditch?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Maybe they do, and Magallion just never...
Oh, she bent the rules with that one, too.
The Dursleys would never sign one.
Maybe, like, other more sensible houses, like the Hufflepuffs and Ravenclaws, they have to have permission slips, and the Gryffindors are just like,
McGonagall's like, I got this, don't worry. You caught that little ball in the air. You're on the team. Come on.
Yeah. And I mean, even in this situation, like, she almost benches him, but then she's like persuaded by Harry being like, but the Slytherins will win. And she's like, oh yeah, no, we can't have that.
You're right.
That's the reason why we can't do it. Go on. We'll just call in Madame Hooch.
For real.
Yeah. I mean, we have the like hospital wing. You'll be fine.
But we haven't even reached the Quidditch match yet in the episode. We've got we've got this little sub that's coming to DADA.
Yeah. So the one time Harry's late to DADA, Snape is the teacher, because that's how life works.
Well, and it's Oliver Wood's fault. Let's not forget this. It's not like Harry's just dilly-dallying. It's that Wood...
Oh, no.
No. But I'm also saying, like, the one time he is late...
Yeah, right. Of course it would be Snape.
Those reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's Wood's fault because they swapped Hufflepuff for Slytherin.
Yeah.
Because Malfoy can't play. Because of a broken arm, which... Skellagrow? Question mark? What? Why?
Yeah, I mean,
they all say, like, he's not injured, we know, right. But, like, we can't prove it.
So then someone else should play. I'm sure you can substitute like they did Ginny for Harry. Come on.
I mean, like, didn't Gryffindor in the past lose games because Harry was in the hospital wing?
Yeah.
And, like, they were like, we don't have a seeker, we're still going to play. It's like,
I think that's I think that's the fault of Wood as the captain for not having a bench.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real. Harry, when he couldn't play, was able to put in Dean and put Ginny over in his seeker spot because he had backup people. Wood was just like, if we can't, we're riding or dying with Harry. So apparently we're dying.
We're dying.
No pressure. but yeah, so we are going to DADA and Snape is charming as ever.
Which, I'm sorry, we've seen substitute teachers before. Grubberly Plank has stepped in for care of magical creatures. Third years of learning, dark magical creatures. Why isn't she called in for a day or two? Any other professor? Why would you put the guy that you know wants the Defense Against the Dark Arts job in? Come on, Dumbledore.
It's Dumbledore's little...
I mean, realistically, because we need more werewolf hints, and this was the way to do it.
No, yeah.
Also, it's like a lot less expensive to get internal sub-coverage than it is external sub-coverage.
Got it. Yeah. What's Flitwick or McGonagall doing? Come on, Sprout, take over.
I know.
Cancel the class for the day.
Snape shouldn't have a prep here. He just was like, no, my newt students will be fine. Put me in Defense Against the Dark Arts. And Dumbledore was like, I guess.
Sure, why not?
That was just like, oh, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, so Snape makes them learn about werewolves because he wants them to pick up that Lupin is a werewolf, which, you know, he should have guessed that all of them would be too dense to do it, aside from Hermione.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But hey.
I mean, whatever. It makes for a great movie scene.
It does. It definitely does. And I will never not hear page 394 in anyone else's voice but Alan Rickman's.
Right,
I'm so sorry. Ever.
I mean, the one thing that annoys me about that movie is that they made the werewolf look so different when number one question here is, what is the difference between a werewolf and a normal wolf? And I'm like, well, if you go by movie, they look very different.
Very different.
I mean, listen, I can't fault Alfonso Cuarón, the director of the movie, for anything that he does ever. I love him as a filmmaker. And the like sort of skeletal, half human, half wolf, hairless spine coming out of the flesh is a really spooky look for a very spooky themed movie. But it's just not right.
No.
And I don't like it.
Yeah. I was very disappointed the first time I've seen the movie. I was like, that's not how he's supposed to look like. That was my main concern at, I don't know, age 12 or something. Yeah.
He should have looked more like the serious dog when he transferred.
Yeah.
For real.
Also, like, we know that Sirius says that he and James were the only match for the werewolf. And I'm like,
how are you matching that
dog against a big werewolf? Yeah.
Even a full-grown stag, I'd still be like, the werewolf will win out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, what's Pettigrew doing then? Because, like, Pettigrew, what is he going to do, like, bite the ear?
No, Pettigrew's gone. Pettigrew has ran off. He's hiding, waiting for it to be over.
What on earth did the Sorting Hat see to make him be like, yeah, courage, boom.
He was like, listen, you're going to play a great part later on in the story. Just stay in Gryffindor. This is all done from the Sorting Hat's perspective.
Yeah.
Back to the book. I know we love the movies, but I really like that literally all the Gryffindors are defending Lupin here. It's not just the main trio, which we would expect this from, but all the other ones are also standing up for Lupin and saying how great a teacher he is.
Yeah. He is the best.
And yeah, I really like that we see other people standing up for him, because that really shows that not just our perspective and the trio's perspective is that he's such a great teacher. It's really everyone is thinking he's a great teacher and having a good time with him.
Yeah,
and honestly, compared to the previous ranks, like, you had Quirrell, who we don't know any of his teaching styles. And then we had Lockhart. So obviously Lupin wins out.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah, and does really for any of the other teachers. Like Moody, Barty Crouch Jr. Ends up being cool, but
crazy. Also
deadly.
Yes.
And then Umbridge is
like, I mean, at least they learn something.
Yeah,
they do learn stuff. They learn curses and things from Moody, which
I wouldn't give him like Teacher of the Year award or any teacher award, but like at least they learn something.
He taught Malfoy a valuable lesson. I'm sure he won't ever curse anybody behind their back again.
Taught Harry several valuable lessons. Like, he's a immensely influential figure in Harry's life.
Which is weird that it's the Death Eater side of him too.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, that is the whole reason he becomes an Auror. It's like, that Death Eater told me to do it. It's like, okay.
And now it's ingrained in my head, I'm going
to
become one.
A Death Eater told me to become a wizard cop, and now I'm doing that.
And then you get Umbridge, who, she's not even on the, like, list of favorites.
Nope.
And then Snape again. So, and at that point, it's,
and his garbage teaching style.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did have a, since we're talking about teaching styles, I did have a question, which I've said here in the doc, even mostly for Sam, because you are a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't understand the point of the lesson that Snape is doing here, where it's just like copy notes from the book. Like, that is not a lesson. That's just study time.
So I have multiple questions about how this came about, but first and foremost, putting together sub plans is not fun, right? You have to write everything down and make sure that it's done in a way that would make sense to your students and that, but also that the sub can follow through. Now, obviously Snape just ditches any sub plans because, as Hermione points out a bunch of times, they're not to werewolves yet. They're not ready for it yet, but Snape is like, nope, blasting through it. So what, and it's really, okay. So Snape feels like how a lot of professional athletes are. Like those superstars like LeBron James or Derek Jeter or any other the big named people, right? Cristiano Ronaldo, they're often seen as not good coaches, aka not good teachers, because it comes naturally to them. And Snape feels like he's that level talented where everything just comes super easy to him. And so he just expects students to be able to do it. So like in potions class, right? He doesn't coach them at all. He doesn't teach them. He just is only interested in the practical side. When we see his defense against the dark arts lessons in book 6, he's only interested in, let's try nonverbal spells now. It's only practical. with like very little additional coaching to go along with it. Same with Occlumency. It's just putting Harry through the mushrooms again and again and again and again and again with no theory or, you know, background information to try and get through it, which is like fine. Like Occlumency obviously is a practical thing, making potions practical thing. But here, there's no practicalness into researching about werewolves. So I'm confused if he's just lazy and just being like, here's the textbook, read this. Or if he's like, this is the only way I know how to do research-based lessons, is just have them copy. What I think it really is he's just like, for the love of God, children, figure out that Lupin is a werewolf. I'm giving you all the information you could possibly have, and only Hermione does it. Which I feel like points to the fact that Hermione may be the greatest witch of her age, but her competition isn't very good.
It's she wins by default. Yeah.
but also the irony, because earlier Snape calls her an insufferable know-it-all. I was like, yeah.
And I love that
she is the only one that's gonna go figure your stuff out.
Right. But I also love that like she says that, you know, no matter what, at least once a week everyone calls Hermione know-it-all. Sometimes Ron calls her twice a day. Like, I just think that's like such a cute little thing, and then they all stand up for her as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ron is paying for it with detention.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not very happy. And I like when he says, why couldn't have Black hidden in Snape's rooms? He could have finished him off for us. Like, knowing now the relationship between Sirius and Snape. I mean, he might have considered it.
Probably.
I was just like, yeah. He might have, like, on his way back after killing Pettigrew, he's like, oh, wait, Snape is here?
You know what, while I'm here.
Let me just quickly do that.
And I wanted to say earlier, I missed this part, sorry. The way that he teaches is very reminiscent of Umbridge at this moment, where, oh, you're just going to copy the lines. We're just opening the books to this page, and you're going to copy. And I feel like, especially like kids like Harry, do not learn that way. And you only really see that in the books kind of so far with teachers that he doesn't, you know, respond to well. Kind of the same with Trelawney's classes. Like, it's one of those things where he's definitely a practical kid. He has to get up and try things.
Yeah. And also, I mean, homework at Hogwarts is hard. Like, they have to write essays and go to the library and get, like, more books on topics mm-hmm. already. So, like, don't make the lessons the same as the homework. Do something more. Yeah. I mean, teachers at Hogwarts also an interesting topic. So the morning of the Quidditch match, Harry is woken up by Peeves, because apparently Peeves is allowed in the house dormitories.
No.
I feel like he shouldn't be. I'm sure he's not.
Like,
oh no!
There's just nobody has any control except for Dumbledore, and Dumbledore isn't really pressed to like keep hounding Peeves. I'm pretty sure Peeves just snuck in when somebody else was trying to get in through the portrait.
I can believe that one all day.
Yeah.
But does that mean any of the other ghosts, like, they, well, because he's not a ghost. He's
a poltergeist. So he's an actual magical
things
being.
Don't apply. Right. Yeah. Things don't actually apply to him that apply to other magical beings. So yeah. Maybe he can. Maybe he slid in through a window.
Yeah. Who knows?
It's just interesting that Peeves has it out for Harry a lot. Because he could have done that to any kid, but he's doing it to Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think Peeves follows Quidditch? Maybe he's like trying to rile up the Gryffindor seeker.
Maybe he doesn't follow Quidditch, but he's always interested in mayhem. And he's like, well, I know this is an important day for this particular kid who has the most important role on this team sport that's happening today. And so I'm just going to cause mayhem.
Just for him.
Yeah, I could see that. And then we have that scene I think, Sam, you mentioned earlier, where we see Crookshanks trying multiple times to go up to the dormitories to get to Scabbers.
Yeah.
And Harry is blocking him.
Just bringing him back down.
Yeah. He's like sitting in front of the fire and just getting up to get Crookshanks to behave.
when I was, you know, like a teenager and rereading these books over and over and over and over and over again, I would always be like, man, I wish the Harry would have just let Crookshanks eat Scabbers. And then none of this would have happened. Of course, now looking at it, like Voldemort would have found a different way to come back. But it might have been possible for Sirius and Harry to actually have been like living in Grimmauld Place together, happy for many years instead of just
right
like a couple months in book five,
year and a half.
Yeah.
But like, if Crookshanks eats Scabbers, then Harry doesn't have any confirmation that what Sirius says is true.
Well, and does Scabbers turn back into a man once he dies?
Oh. Crookshanks explodes because.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same like Barty Crouch being turned into a bone. Like, does he untransfigure at some point? Like,
I think the idea there is that they just, it's permanent.
It's permanent. Okay. I'm here for that.
I mean, I guess, you know, Peter seeing a cat attack him, he could always decide to transform into a person and just kick the cat away.
Oh.
Because he doesn't have to remain.
He doesn't.
No. He doesn't have to remain in rat form if he's that endangered of being eaten by a cat.
I do wonder how many times like Ron came back and his bed looked very different, looked like a full grown man had just been sleeping in it, you know?
Oh my gosh.
It's so scary. Like the fact
it's,
that
and it's so creepy.
The fact that Pettigrew is just this full grown man hanging out with 11-year-old boys, 12-year-old boys, and then 13-year-old boys all the time is like it just screams of pedophilia and really makes me uncomfortable if I think about it too long.
Yeah.
He also lived at the Weasleys for so long.
So long.
Right. And so he was coming to Hogwarts with Percy and everything when Percy had him, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, how many memory charms do you think he cast on Weasley kids or Weasley adults?
Oh, wait, but he doesn't have a wand.
Yeah, that's always a good question. Like, how does Sirius have his wand? Does Pettigrew have his wand? How do they get wands afterwards, etc.?
Yeah.
Oh, Sirius doesn't have his wand, though.
No.
But he does eventually.
He uses Snape's later on.
Yeah.
And then, but then he has a wand in order.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dumbledore did like a favor.
Nice.
And got him, like, Ollivander owed him a favor. And he was like, don't ask who it's for, just make one.
Well, it might have been that, you know, Pettigrew saw Arthur. Arthur saw him. They wrestled for a wand. Pettigrew got the wand and cast the memory charm.
Ooh. No, I want that. I want that fanfic.
There's some good lucrative fanfiction headcanon.
Yeah, we're providing a lot of these today. So then really the rest of the chapter is all about Quidditch. And I have so many questions because Quidditch doesn't make any sense. First question really is from earlier is still, why were the Slytherins able to swap when, you know, Gryffindors were apparently never able to do that before when Harry was out?
Because Snape's a prick.
And also, if, you know, like, if they swap, wouldn't that mean Slytherin would just play Ravenclaw in their first game? And wouldn't that also be around the same time?
Yeah, right. But I think the idea here is that Gryffindor is the team to beat this year. That they're the heavy favorites and that Slytherin just doesn't want to play Gryffindor in a storm as much as possible. But also there's this huge storm and they just don't want to play in the storm as well. Which I think Harry or Wood or somebody says right out, which is there's this big storm. They're flying on broomsticks. That means it's super windy. Like, it's much more dangerous. They just want to have a better shot at winning against anybody when it's calm weather.
A nicer day. And that's definitely a Snape favoritism. Like, I'm sure he was like, you know, I can't let my team can't play because he's injured. So instead of putting in a sub, we'll just swap with Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Like, where McGonagall's like, no, we're playing. We duel to kill. Like, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Another question I have is also from before the game actually happens, where Oliver is all about, we practice all the wrong moves because Hufflepuff plays so differently. Now, okay, I've played basketball for multiple years. We've never practiced moves specifically for different teams. We always, like, you know, offensively, you try to do your own game because you try to play to your strength of your team. And then defensively, there's only so many options of what you can do. Does this make sense to you, that you practice different moves for different teams? I mean, I appreciate there's only four teams to begin with, so you would only have to focus on three different teams. So it's probably different than my basketball experience, but also how much of a strategy can you have in a game with four balls and everyone's flying? And
maybe the style of flying, maybe their formations. Like, I think it's more of like that. Yeah. It's probably the keepers or the chasers more than anything.
That's what I'm guessing too, is it's much more like the way in which the beaters are deciding to attack certain players on each team, depending on strengths, and then chaser formations. And I would guess that is only really makes a difference on defense, right? If you like the hulking team that is Slytherin, you're probably much more nimble and agile in order to beat them. But maybe if Hufflepuff's players are smaller and quicker, then you're just much more body aggressive in your tackles. Who knows? But also, like, there's got to be something in there with the way in which you're forming around the type of defense that Hufflepuff might play. So really, if you're thinking about it in basketball terms, maybe Slytherin just does man-to-man, take who you take, take who takes you.
Yeah.
And then maybe Hufflepuff plays his own defense and you have to practice against that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think in my head it was just like, well, we know Slytherin plays dirty, so prepare for that. But like, what else can you really
do? Wear your brass knuckles.
Right. Protect your face. Yeah. Like, I also think like during the type of weather like that they normally play in has some accountability of it, because like they said, the wind, and then there are certain times where they mention, oh, the light, so you know, fly into the sun or fly out of the sun. So I always feel like they know how the other teams play that way, where like they use the wind to their advantage or they use the light. Like I could see Slytherin doing some dirty trick like that.
Yeah
That never has even occurred to me, because again, I play basketball and you play that indoors. So
you don't play that 50 feet in the air?
No, maybe I should try.
Although, you know, if you're playing outside with basketball, you do have to account for wind. Like if you are playing at a park outside, like you're not taking as many 3-point shots if it's a windy day.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not. And also when it rains, you can just forget it, because the ball will just slip out of your hands.
You will slip out of your shoes. You will break all ankles.
Yeah, that also.
You will slip off your burrow. You will drop the quaffle.
Yeah, exactly. Which is also crazy about like the whole impervious charm thing, which I know is up in the dock a bit later, but like, it's crazy that they go in and like, who knows if it's even cheating? Like, are they allowed to use impervious, or do you just have to let the elements be the elements?
Because
like,
I mean, it's like high school game versus like actual professional.
Also, like, I'm sure Madame Hooch, no matter what her yellow eyes are able to see, can't see magic being used, and so doesn't know that Harry's glasses are suddenly...
Probably not.
Because she's also probably not using impervious. Mm-hmm.
Isn't it also like this book where like later when Harry learns the Patronus charm, he's like, he made sure to take the wand with him in his Quidditch robes?
Yes.
So presumably they don't bring the wands usually, which is why Hermione has to do the charm. Yeah. But also, is it against the rules then?
I'm an outside party fan coming in and being like, let me help you win with magic.
Right. That definitely is cheating and probably
it
not.
Sounds unethical. Yeah. At the very
I don't know how you would determine that.
Right, because Madame
But it's like the Quidditch
them.
World Cup.
Yeah.
But then you have the like kind of the same with the Quidditch World Cup. Like you can't interfere. Their mascots couldn't interfere. So I'm assuming that kind of has the same thing, like no magic.
So what I'm hearing is that the Quidditch, Gryffindor's Quidditch Cup win is tainted in book three. That they are cheaters.
Ooh, well, I mean, they lose this game. But so
they are essentially the New England Patriots.
But they lose this game, so I suppose for this one.
Well, maybe they deserved it then.
Yeah.
And honestly, this isn't like cheating. This is just protection. Why isn't Harry wearing, first of all, why is Harry the only one wearing glasses? Second of all, why is he wearing goggles?
Right. With little windshield wipers on him.
Or something.
I mean, also, shouldn't they just have canceled the game because the weather was so extreme?
Or put a net at the bottom.
And I say this again, McGonagall only cancels games if a kid has been petrified, and only if a kid has been petrified in her house. Other than that, we're not canceling Quidditch. Yeah.
Penelope Clearwater, whatever. Hermione Granger got petrified, we should probably cancel.
Yeah, we're going to cancel this one match.
But also probably because our seeker is friends with the person, so...
So he can't play, he's distressed.
If it had been Runo, Wasnib, who cares?
Right. We'll tell him after the match.
Tell him after the match, go win.
Yeah, no, they don't... You never get a cancellation in Quidditch except in Book 2. Unless I'm wrong, but everything else, either Harry plays or he's... out of the game for whatever reason.
Well, it's crazy because, like, yeah. You know, they go to play in Book 6 after Harry literally tries to murder someone accidentally.
Yeah, you know.
As one does.
It's another day at Hogwarts.
Safety in Hogwarts, you know. So Harry falls off his broom, has to be saved by Dumbledore because...
there is no giant net.
Exactly. And we got a tiny foreshadowing because Hermione and Ron tell him that he had silver stuff coming out of his wand. So, and I think a few chapters from now we learn that is a Patronus charm.
And I'm sorry, if Miss Know-It-All knows it all, Hermione would, the moment they knew that the Dementors were in Hogwarts, you are telling me Hermione didn't go to the library and find everything out about a Dementor? Granted, she can't cast the Patronus. That's the one spell she's not good at. But come on, she should have known the silver stuff was a Patronus.
So I have
form of it.
I have some headcanon that Hermione's constant use of the Time Turner during this year addles her brain in a way that she forgets important plot information when she needs to.
Ooh.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could also see that, you know, maybe the Patronus is just not as common, and it's because it's a thing you wouldn't learn until any WT DADA classes.
True.
Maybe it's in the restricted section of the library because it's Dementors related and it's such a advanced spell.
Maybe.
Even if she wanted to, she couldn't have looked it up.
Well, and I don't.
But she could also just be way too busy to look stuff up.
Yeah, I forgot she's juggling 15, 16 different classes at a time.
And I don't think Dementors are covered in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. They're not. It goes from Krupp to Demiguise to Diricol.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're technically beasts to begin with.
They're just amorphous shadow beings of soul-sucking propensity.
That's a good definition.
We'll go with that. So, Harry wakes up in the hospital wing. And I just really, you know, I love Fred and George and their attempts to cheer Harry up and make him feel better about everything that has happened. They're so nice.
Yes, I will say that is my favorite part of... the prisoner movie of, well, he looks all right. Well, let's drop you off of the astronomy tower and see how you look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Wood is definitely sobbing in the showers. I don't care if it's a joke or not. Wood is still crying in the showers right now.
No, I think that's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, with this whole, like, you know, when they break, they mention Harry's broom is destroyed, right? And, like, you would think at this point, like, we've seen Reparo used before.
Yeah.
This is some, like, really early foreshadowing to the fact that when wands break, they cannot be repaired.
Right.
Just like when brooms break, they can't be repaired in the same way, which I think is a really great little tidbit here that we have an established magic system. As much as we don't get very many established magic systems, we get it here.
This is
that sometimes when magical things are smashed to smithereens, they don't work the same way afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ron's wand. Oh, could you imagine if they did try and repair the Nimbus?
It'd be worse than a bucking Bronco.
Right. Hermione at least repaired his wand in Deathly Hallows and it just was feebled and broke again.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine him, like, trying to get back on the broom and it's, like, shatters.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't Ron's wand also fall victim to the Whomping Willow?
Yeah.
Am I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it breaks,
so
it breaks in the crash.
2 years in a row.
Yeah, somehow in the crash. So, yeah. Whomping Willow 2, Magical Object 0.
Yeah. I mean, I fully believe that this is only happening so we don't forget the Whomping Willows as
thing
because it becomes important.
I mean, it also gives Harry the Firebolt in a few more chapters. Like, I feel like that's, you know, that's really the reason why.
Well, it gives him it in a few more chapters, but then he's not allowed to ride it for, like, another half year of the...
Yeah.
Also,
school year.
The injustice.
Also, I know this isn't in this chapter, but the fact that Gringotts is just like, yeah, Sirius, you can take money out.
Yes.
It's just, I mean,
oh, you want it out of the black vault? Cash
delivered this to the post office? Yeah, that's fine.
What?
And you want it out of a criminal's vault? Okay, sure. You have all the information. Done. We'll just ship it right over.
They just have the same security. It's just like... system in place that Circuit Dagen has. Like, well, he had the password. I mean,
he had the account number.
It just feels like banks, right? Like, banks hold terrible people's and, like, bad government's monies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you want to just access it? Sure. We're not going to ask questions why you're accessing a murderer's vault.
Yeah. Cat.
Cat. Yes.
Well, what a chapter.
What a chapter. Yes. R.I.P. Nimbus.
Oh, yes. Yes,
such
yes,
a good
yes.
Room.
And also that same room that McGonagall bought him.
I know.
Yeah.
Which we were talking about
earlier. Which is crazy that she didn't, that nobody saw the broom fly away. Like, I assume that it just, that it, the brooms
drifted
don't
off.
Peter off. Like, they don't drift off. They just zoom straight. And that Harry was headed that way. And that's why it hit it. Otherwise, I'm like, somebody should have been like, hey, is that broom...
Anybody and you're telling me McGonagall wasn't like, whoa, 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 I paid for that.
Exactly.
Give me that. Get that back here.
No, hold up.
That was not cheap.
She sees the secret fall. It's like, his body will mend. Where's the broom?
He's like, well, Dumbledore has Harry. I'll right. look after
I'll
the
I'll look for the broom.
Maybe that's a safety feature they add. They don't go with the nets, but they're like, well, for future occasions, we'll do something so brooms don't drift off.
That would be helpful.
Maybe someday.
Because there's a lot of money behind those.
Hogwarts may be protected by more than just walls, but definitely not the Quidditch pitch.
Nope.
Soft ground, if you're lucky.
Well, I mean, I suppose it was soft because it was muddy.
Dumbledore got to him in time. This time.
I also like, they were like, Dumbledore was so furious. Oh, really? You think so?
About time.
Yeah. I honestly kind of want to see that conversation where Fudge is like, no, Dementors are going to the school. And Dumbledore's like, no, I don't want it. And Fudge is like, no, I'm the minister.
Dumbledore's like,
this is happening.
Outside of my school.
Dumbledore's
not
like,
in the school.
I could remove you from office in 2 seconds and take your position and everyone would forget your name. You are not putting Dementors in my school.
Okay, so we'll put them on the grounds outside.
What about
we'll
just outside? Around the gate. Fine.
Hogsmeade, we'll put them there.
The villagers won't mind if they're depressed for a whole year.
Dumbledore's like, gosh. Oh, wait, doesn't my brother live there? He'll deal with it.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's already depressed.
He doesn't have his goats anymore.
Oh, God. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. It's been such a pleasure to chat this chapter with you and have you back on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
I hope you had a good time. You brought a lot of very excellent points. So
yes, thank you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you guys.
Not a surprise for a Ravenclaw.
Not at all.
And the next episode of this podcast will cover the topic spells. So I'm already looking forward to listening to that.
Tune in for that one.
Yes.
Be on our show. Did you know that was an option, listeners? Yes, you could be on our show. If you visit our website, which is alohomorapodcast.com, and then you choose the option, be on the show, you can follow the instructions and send us your audition. You just need a microphone and a pair of headphones. If you are chosen to guest host, we'll walk you through the rest. While you're on the website, be sure to visit the topic submit page to tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about on future episodes.
And don't forget, you can always contact and find us out in the wild world of the internet. We are on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Spotify at AlohomoraMN for MuggleNet. And you can find us on facebook.com/OpenTheDumbledore. And don't forget, we have voicemails back again. So go on the Be On The Show page and leave us a voicemail and we'll listen to them and play them on the episodes. As I've said earlier, please leave us 5-star reviews and we will read them out on episodes. So go do that now. And if you're more old school and you don't like social media because, apparently they can go down for hours at a time. We have a website that's called alohomorapodcast.com, and you can always reach us via email at alohomorapodcast@gmail.com.
A huge big thank you again to Brian Stischer, a two-time sponsor, for sponsoring this particular episode. Thank you, Brian. Woo!
Thank you.
Yes. Applause, applause. Hey, Sam. Hey, other Sam. Did you know you can get Patreon, and on there is an ad-free version of Alohomora? Other Sam, are you telling me that there is an ad-free version of Alohomora? Yes, it's on Patreon. But how do I access Patreon? You can become a sponsor for as little as $2 a month. Go to patreon.com/alohomora. There you'll find some access to Dumbledore's office, episode sponsoring, exclusive clips, bonus episodes, and more. That sounds great, Sam. I know, other Sam.
I'm sorry, I'm just still mentally giggling. That was such a fun idea. I suppose we're back to regular Sam, and I have been Aurelia.
I'm Sam, the regular one. Thank you for listening to episode 334 of Alohomora. And now we will open the Dumbledore!
Alohomora is produced by Tracy Dunstan and edited by Patrick Muselek. It was co-created by Noah Freed and Kat Miller and is brought to you by APWBD LLC.
But once they're in the dormitories, that's the safest place for them. Versus because Sirius had already tried to break into a dormitory, they're like, oh, my power just went out. Hold on, everybody. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a huge rainstorm here, and it just knocked out my power, which means my Audacity just stopped recording.
Oh, no.
My power has now just gone back on, so we're going to have to wait a couple minutes. I'm okay. So sorry. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
When you said my power went off, I did think you were talking about the fat lady, and I was like, wait, what?
No, that's just a very instant reaction to, oh God, what do I do?
Do you think Audacity will have saved something? Do we have to start over?
I don't know.
Sorry if I'm asking the questions that we maybe don't want to have the answer for.
I wonder if Patrick can use my Skype file from that first conversation and we can just pick it up. I can leave like a brief, hey listeners, at the beginning of this, we were all going well and then my power went out and Audacity got deleted. So you'll be hearing my Skype version of a phone call on top of two other much better audios at the very beginning of our actual chapter discussion. The Audacity starts back in and we should be in good hands there.
Yeah. I mean, at least that was convenient timing.
Yeah, it's a good break. We can just start from the top. My computer's waking up.
2 hours later.
Are you having a lot of storms at the moment?
Well, no, it's just about to start. We're having what's called an atmospheric river. Which is really intense. Especially for an area that doesn't see rain very often.
It's so wild to me to have, to live somewhere where power can just go out.
I know. It's weird that the infrastructure is so poor.
I remember when I was growing up, it used to happen every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think I've had a power outage in, 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just like, okay. I forget that people have to suffer through stuff.
Yeah, we do. Oh. Automatic crash recovery. Awesome.
Ooh, fancy.
Let's see.
I mean, you could potentially save that as a wave, that first, the recovery one.
Yeah, I'll do that. Do a save first. Okay, wait. My sound just started to work.
All right, is this working? This is working good. All right, is this working?
Okay, I can hear myself. Did it save it all the way through?
You might go into the kitchen and then accidentally go into the
pot. Yes.
Cool.
Wonderful.
Sorry, wait, Patrick.
Sorry, Patrick, indeed. Hello, Patrick. Sorry about this. This is my new file. Williams part two. Good. All right, Aurelia, lead us through the sink.
Okay, sink number two. 1, 2, 3.